The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
If you haven't tried it already, please go to voxmarkets.co.uk/app and download the app there. It's free of charge, absolutely free. And do you know what happens is if you press follow, the follow button on a company, what happens is whenever that company releases news, you will get it straight to the front screen of your phone, free of charge, within seconds of them announcing it. Do you know what? I did it yesterday on a company, and literally, I logged in. The significant news came out. I logged into my account. I'm not going to tell you which company it is, because I didn't buy, but I was seconds away from buying. I like this company. I've been keeping it and watching it for a while. They had news out. I went to my stockbrokers there. I logged it. I could have bought this company for 42 pence, it was. At the end of the day, they hit 49 pence. I didn't buy, though. That's how fast the notifications are. So voxmarkets.co.uk/app. I said download it. Follow a company, hitting the follow button on a company, search for that company, of course, and they'll send you RNSs whenever they release them, within seconds. Okay, on today's podcast, it is the 1,103rd episode, and it is the 27th of June 2018, of course. On today we have Kieran Mazaria, CEO of Cadence, KDNC, and Kieran discusses their heads of term agreement to invest in Premier African Minerals, Zulu Lithium and Tantalum Project. Also on the podcast, Leon Kutsia, CEO of Jubilee Metals Group, JLP. And Leon talks about the progress of the company in the last 6 months, or the first 6 months of the year, and what's to come. Also on the podcast, Neil Carson, CEO, and Graham Heath, CFO of i3 Energy. That's i3E ticker. And the guys give an update on the potential joint venture partners, which would fully fund both the Liberator field development and the appraisal. Plus, I have Neil Carson, CEO, and Graham Heath, CFO of i3 Energy. That's i3E. And the guys give an update on potential joint venture partners, which would fully fund both the Liberator field development and the appraisal of Liberator West. Plus, Matthew Idion, CEO of Rose Petroleum, R-O-S-E, Rose, discusses the significance of their maiden contingent resource and net present value estimate of their acreage within the Paradox Basin in Utah. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kieran Mazaria, Chief Executive Officer of Cadence. KDNC is the ticker there. Kieran, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for listening to Justin.
Yeah, well, listen, you've got a lot of news out because you've got a lot of investments going on, very exciting there, in an area that's very exciting. So there's a lot gone under the bridge since we last spoke, but you've released a significant news out today, and it's about the investment or heads of terms signed in Premier African Minerals' sort of lithium assets. So we'll go into that in a bit. Before we do, for people listening right now who are not familiar with the company or brand new to the podcast, explain, summarise Cadence for them, if you could, Kieran.
Well, in pretty simple terms, Cadence is an investment company. It takes a private equity approach to its investment in investing in elements that will power the future of how we transport ourselves and how we will power our houses, and that is in the electric vehicle market and battery storage. So we invest in the minerals associated with that in particular, and we're focusing on lithium. So we have a diversified portfolio of investment. We've invested in things from really early stage where there's obviously a high level of risk, but we take our technical expertise, make that assessment whether that project is going to be viable in the long term, and invest. And to date, you know, the vast majority of our projects, where the majority of our money has been invested, has been really successful, with us investing in assets where there are pre-resources or just declared resources, and now they're, you know, with Bacanora Minerals, we have an 8% stake in them. They're about to, we understand that they're, you know, in the process of doing their funding to construct an incredibly large plant, which, you know, will be producing 35,000 tons of lithium carbonate per annum at full production. And we've got a stake in EMH, which is sort of the third largest hard rock deposit in the world for lithium. So we're invested in lithium assets. And, you know, during the tail end of last year, we moved more strategically to invest in the private companies, i.e. the project level. This allows us a very different level of control. So it allows us to get much more involved with the development of a company, have much more management say, so and also pick undervalued assets so we can take much larger stakes. So one of that strings to that bow was Argentina, which, you know, we have an option to take 100% in that asset. At the moment, that's going through licensing. And more recently is the asset that we've just announced today, which is to earn in 30% of into the Zulu project directly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I read a bullish article on lithium yesterday, and I assume, you know, you are quite bullish on lithium. I mean, we all know about the EV revolution now, but, I mean, you must have something, a fact or a figure in your head that would explain why you are bullish on lithium, do you?
No, absolutely. The simple factoid is, put it this way, forget about lithium being the green option and all the rest of it. It's about a cost imperative. Ultimately, within the next 3 to 5 years, parity will be reached in the so that you'll be able to purchase a bog standard, you know, Ford Escort or something equivalent, mm-hmm. or Ford Fiesta, at the same or if not cheaper price than it would cost to buy an internal combustion engine. So there is a cost imperative to buy that, because then, you know, the refueling price is about 5 times lower, the maintenance costs are 10 times lower. Overall, it becomes just cheaper to own one. So once you have that, like when you have a lot of money going to technologies, the cost curves drop down rapidly. And we've seen that with lithium-ion batteries, when 10 years ago, they were, you know, $10,000 per kilowatt hour. No, sorry, $1,000 per kilowatt hour. Now they're sitting at $200 a kilowatt hour. There's been a massive change in that cost factor, and that will continue to improve. And as soon as we see it hit that cost parity, people just buy it because it's there's an economic imperative to do so. Yeah. And then the penetration will go from where it is now, 2%, you know, easily, if a, you know, sort of disruptive technology, it'll go, it should go to sort of 80% of the market. Yeah. Very rapidly. So, and there isn't really enough lithium coming online, lithium products coming online in terms of new projects to meet that demand in our understanding. There are plenty of lithium assets around there, but it's picking the right ones in the right locations that have the best chance of coming to commerciality in the right time frame.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? That, to me, I mean, like you said, you can make any argument about green energy and all that, but when it comes down to it, the majority of people who drive cars, you know, like I said, they are ruled by what they can afford, you know, and they act, you know, according to what's coming in their bank account. And if they can buy cheaper cars, and essentially it doesn't matter if they're worse to the environment, most people, you know, but these are not, you know, if they buy cheaper cars and run the car more cheaply, that will sway them, you know, in the end, won't it? I mean, it's the pocket that counts with most people, you know?
And that's how every disruptive technology has occurred, whether it be the printing press, all the way to the aeroplane, and once that got cheap, everyone just, you know, package holidays, everyone just went everywhere. It's about cost.
Yeah, yeah.
And ultimately, that's what the way that I look at it.
Yeah. Let's talk about the news today then. Heads of terms signed to earn into up to 30% of a significant DFS-ready lithium project. This is from, obviously, Premier African Minerals' project there. So take us through what you like about this, Kieran, and why you've decided to go up to 30% in this.
Well, as I mentioned just in my previous things about the right asset, the right jurisdiction, and the right timing. So the right asset. So number one, we've previously stated we want assets that are closer to cash flow, and therefore we've shifted away our focus from assets that are going to produce an eventual lithium carbonate project, lithium carbonate product. We're going to assets that produce spodumene, which is a precursor to lithium carbonate. That has lower capex generally. If you look at the capex for this is $68 million. A peak funding of $68 million. But if you look at the large lithium carbonate plants, you know, they could be $200 to $400 million. So this is lower capex, and also this asset is at DFS stage. So a lot of the risk, in all of the risk in terms of the technical risk associated with defining the resource, has been removed, and therefore we can do the DFS, which is the definitive feasibility, to change that resource into what we call measured and proven measured resources, and get into reserve status. And also, given the target, there's another 120 million tons of target material, to drill that out and expand it. So it's got the it's close to production relatively. We're producing a product that's not going to require massive capital costs, and we've taken out the technical risk is removed. So all of those things mean that it's really suitable for our investment thesis. In addition to that, when you look at it comparative to its peers, it's considerably undervalued. When you look at, you know, it's got an NPV of in the region of $100 million on the spodumene. If you wanted to go up to a carbonate plant, you know, that's $700 million. But $100 million on the spodumene, that's, you know, and effectively we're valuing it at about a $17 million valuation at the moment with our earning. It's good value for us, and that's where we see that. And in terms of the location, well, look, if you talked to me about investing in Zimbabwe maybe a year ago, I would have had a very different comment. And to be fair, we have seen this project being approached to us, but we like it now that we can see stability in Zimbabwe, and we can see that there's an interest in foreign investment. And by investing directly in the project and having also the management being involved in the management, bear in mind that we're going to have two members on the board at local level. We'll be part of the technical committee. We're going to be intimately involved in the development of this project. And we also have an area of exclusivity. So, you know, Prem can't stake areas around it without approaching Cadence first. So it's a good deal in that regard. In addition, we've secured the marketing rights to the product, 100% of the marketing rights. We've secured that subject to us investing the 30%. So we believe that we've picked an asset that's close to production. It's got the right metrics in terms of grade and size to make it competitive, and it's undervalued. So overall, I think this is a great investment for Cadence, and, you know, subject to the due diligence being completed over the next 60 days, we look forward to really progressing this asset forward and moving it to production as quick as possible.
Yeah, yeah. Can you just explain, for people not aware, I mean, it says here their scoping study revealed a lithium concentrate net present value of $127 million and lithium carbonate NPV of 718. Can you explain the difference there?
Yes. So as I mentioned earlier on, there are really two camps that sort of sit around the market in terms of getting exposure to lithium. One is to produce a lithium carbonate. The lithium carbonate is the precursor that really, if it's battery gate, that goes into the battery packs and, you know, is used in electric vehicles. Now, a lithium concentrate, or what is often called a spodumene concentrate, is a further precursor to that. So effectively you're providing a 6% concentrate. So it's got about 6% lithium oxide, and then you ship that off to China, who then turn it into the lithium carbonate. Mm-hmm. So the advantage of going by the spodumene route is, as I mentioned beforehand, the capital cost is less, and it's quicker to construction, because the reality, it's a very simple process flow sheet. It's crush, grind, some flotation, and some shaking table to take out the tantalum stroke tin if there isn't tin in the asset, and really that's it. It's to take the rock, which will be, let's say, at 1% lithium oxide, and concentrating that rock up to 6, mm-hmm. which is a physical process, which therefore is cheaper capital-wise, and in addition to that, yes, it's cheaper capital-wise and easier to do. So the reason there's a difference in the NPV is, of course, the spodumene is $900 a ton, and the lithium carbonate, depending on which market you look, but they use $15,000 a ton to that. So the NPV is higher because you're producing a higher value product. The disadvantages of it, there is more complexity in the mineralogy and the complexity in the processing, and the capital cost, as I mentioned beforehand, can be multiples higher, $200 to $400 million. You know, some projects go into the $400-500 million, $600 million mark to achieve lithium carbonate. Mm-hmm. So for us, this is about initially getting that spodumene production up and running and deliver cash flow from that. And if suitable, and if it becomes the right size, then look at the lithium carbonate option. And hence, that's why the scoping study was done in that manner.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And it's interesting here. So, I mean, you know, people are obviously talking about lithium, and I see your company, you know, I mean, spreads risk on that, doesn't it, investment? Because, of course, I mean, all early stage, you know, explorers are high risk. But I suppose, you know, people can sort of spread that risk, can't they? But looking at your company, knowing you're fully well, you know, you are sort of spread across the sector, aren't you, really?
Yeah, we are spread across the sector. I mean, we have all the way from very early exploration projects like the Argentinian asset and all the way to the projects that are going to get funded and start construction. Mm. And reality, we've been invested in these projects from that stage anyway. So, for example, with Bacanora, we invested when they just really just issued their scoping study. With EMH, when they just had a resource. So, you know, we've been involved in this sector since 2013. And up to the end of last year, the returns on those investments were around 125%. So, you know, our strategy has worked. We've picked much more winners than losers in terms of these assets. And then the majority of our capital has gone into, you know, going on to European Metals Holdings and Bacanora. And those have both performed up to end of last year really well. So we're confident that we can, you know, identify assets that have got great potential. And we're also confident that, you know, by taking and leveraging our expertise within the market, within you know, the offtake market, so we can add value to all our projects, in particular the ones now that we're much more involved in with the San Luis in exploration project in Argentina and, of course, Zulu Lithium.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, listen, give us three quick reasons, Kieran, for anyone listening right now who are not following the story, likes the sound of this, though, but are not following the story yet, give them three quick bullet point reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list.
Well, the three reasons to follow us are, firstly, Cadence is exposed to one of the most revolutionary metals, which will be a mark in our time of what we're going to be going in the future, e.g. lithium and the electric vehicle revolution. Two, we've got exposure to multiple assets across the development chain, whether it be early exploration all the way up to construction of new assets. And three, if you look at the performance of our investments, up to the end of last year, we've delivered about 125% return on the performance of our investments, and the large majority of those have been highly successful.
Yeah, absolutely. Kieran, good to chat to you. Hopefully, we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Leon Coetzer, Chief Executive Officer of Jubilee Metals Group. JLP is a ticker. Leon, thanks for coming back on.
Thank you, Justin. Thank you for the opportunity.
Now, we've not spoken for a month or so, and a fair bit of news has gone under the bridge kind of thing, and we'll get an update in a bit on how you're doing this year. Before we do, Leon, I always like to do this for people who are new to the podcast, who are not familiar with the company. Can you summarise what Jubilee Metals Group is all about, please?
Oh, thanks, Justin. Yeah, so Jubilee Metals Group is a diversified metals producing company. We're not just a projects company, we're actually producing metals, diversified across platinum, chrome, currently in the execution of a lead and zinc project in Zambia as well. We primarily focus on the recovery of metals locked in surface mine waste materials. These wastes were dumped on surface over many, many, many years of mining. And with today's technology, Jubilee's ability in processing and developing of processes, we target these metals and recover them profitably. Marvel. That's what we do.
Yeah, excellent stuff. And like you said, you've got several things going on. So let's go through some of those projects. And like I said, we came up to almost half the year. Where's it gone? Time's flown. 2018. So take us through the progress you've made in the last 6 months, if you could, Leon.
Thanks, Justin. Yes, quite right. We've hit the mid-mark of 2018, and it's maybe a very opportune time just to reflect on what we said we would achieve and where we are, and of course, what lies ahead. Jubilee has seen in its first 6 months of this year, we continue to break operational records. Our projects continue to show earnings growth quarter on quarter. But more specifically, we were quite happy to inform the market a couple of weeks back that our Hoornik project, which is a platinum recovery project in South Africa, also focusing on the recovery of platinum from surface material, it set new records, producing 2,100 ounces in a single month, and continue to increase its production. We announced that our second platinum surface project, which is called Platgrow, that's starting up with we and Northern Platinum, which is one of the world's top five platinum producers. We've partnered on the processing of that material. Also, again, it's material already at surface that we will now recover the platinum from. That project is targeting processing capacities which is higher than our Hoornik project. It's quite important, of course, that these are all projects at surface, so it doesn't come with the complexities of mining, mm-hmm. and, of course, the massive added cost and risk of mining. Our third one, also South African-based, which is Dilokong, or we quite often refer to it as DCM. There we're busy building what we call a fine chrome recovery plant, which targets the recovery of fine chrome, also in surface material, about 850,000 tons of material lying on surface. The key important part there at this specific project is once we've recovered this fine chrome, of course, that allows us to access the platinum that's also in that material. So all in all, our South African projects are really progressing well. The operational projects are doing really well, and our new projects are either in construction or coming online. Then, of course, as we said, we are diversified. So we've gone into Zambia. Zambia is a historical mining jurisdiction, massive surface waste materials lying on surface in Zambia. We partnered there on a project called Kabwe, which is a zinc, lead, and vanadium project. We are targeting there to first bed down the zinc recovery circuit, which is under construction as we speak. Once that's done, we then move on to the lead and the vanadium side of that project. That project alone has 6 million tons of material lying on surface, so many years of production lying there. And as we told the market, we didn't go into Zambia only because of Kabwe. We, of course, have quite high expectations and aspirations for Zambia on the back of our ability to recover these metals from surfaces. And, we've engaged with the big boys in Zambia now, especially the companies that have recognized our abilities, have recognized the value our joint ventures can bring. So we very much engaged in several discussions in Zambia as we look to grow that portfolio. So all in all, been a very busy first 6 months. And beyond that, of course, to be able to do all this, the Jubilee team is growing. We had small beginnings back in 2007 and 8, and the team is now growing, both from technologists and project managers and operational managers. But we were very excited to also tell the world that we were able to attract the likes of a Dr. Evan Kirby, very renowned process metals recovery expert in the industry, onto our board. He's taking on the role of as technical director to lead our teams. So, yeah, it's been a very busy 6 months for Jubilee.
Yeah, absolutely. And what would you say is coming up for in the next 6 months then, Leon?
Well, I suppose the next 6 months it's a big month of construction and delivery. We have two projects under construction, DCM Fine Chrome, Kabwe project under construction, and we have the Platco project starting with the movement of material to the northern processing plants. So it's a big 6 months of actual delivery. And more excitingly as well, of course, is it's the 6 months where we really are targeting to secure further surface projects in Zambia, which is our next immediate jurisdiction. We're looking to grow. Of course, we're looking further than Zambia. We're looking across the waters to the mining jurisdictions in South America and Australia, because, you know, once you've set the foundation of what we can do and we've got proven track records of successful operating large projects, it's a very nice foundation to use to grow into other mining jurisdictions. So, it's a 6 months lying ahead of high pressure delivery of projects and finding new projects.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, you're across, so like you said, many sectors, many sort of metals there. And what are you, the macro feel, is it quite bullish at the moment in the metal space?
It's an interesting question. I suppose, what helps is because, as you say, we're a diversified group, so we're not just in precious metals. Mm-hmm. We're also into the typical base metals, vanadium being a key part for the batteries going forward, zinc, lead, all being that component. So each metal has nowadays a very much a decoupled cycle from one another. Precious metals are feeling slight negative pressure at the moment with the massive initial current focus on the electric cars and vehicles, while, of course, the likes of the zincs and lead and vanadium are doing exceptionally well with that focus on the electric batteries and circuits for the immediate term. So in general, bullish on the base metals, flat to on the precious metals, which again assists us in many ways, because on one side you diversified, but very importantly, on the other side, we're not mining. So our cost structures are very light. Yeah. Our margins on these metals are very strong. So we are not as affected by the swings and roundabouts of the metal prices.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Leon, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of the progress you've made in the first 6 months of 2018 and what you're going to be doing in the next 6 months, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I suppose the first and most important part is that we are fast-growing, diversified producing metals company, which protects us against these swings in metal prices and markets, as we've discussed. Secondly, our projects continue to demonstrate quarter-on-quarter earnings growth. So from financial position, the company is getting stronger and stronger. And I suppose thirdly, Jubilee is not just operating projects and or trying to chase projects. It's we have operating projects and we're executing our next wave of projects at the same time. So we're not just a company with a dream. We're a company that is operating and busy building our next projects as a group.
Absolutely. Leon, good to chat to you. And like I say, you've got a lot going on, so hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. Thanks so much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now, we have Neil Carson, CEO, and Graham Heath, CFO of i3 Energy. That's I3E. Guys, thanks for coming on.
Hello there. Hi, Justin. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Graham. Hi, Neil. And some significant news out about, I know a lot of people have been waiting for this, some detail on the joint venture negotiations. It's not fully revealed as yet, but you've made a lot of progress by the looks of it, and we'll go into that in a bit. Before we do, guys, for people listening right now who are not familiar with your story, i3 Energy story, can you summarise what you're all about, please?
Yeah, we are a UK-focused operating company. We've got one project called Liberator. It's an oil field. It's very close to infrastructure, and it's just in a great location in the North Sea. So we're the operator, and you may recall we've filed field development plans, and we were awarded in the 30th round. We were awarded quite a bit of acreage that extends the whole Liberator trend. So we're really excited about that, and that's really has led into the joint venture conversation we're talking about today.
Absolutely. And just give the potential as to what this field there and the award you had in the 30th round. What's the potential here, Neil?
Well, the last time we spoke to you, you might recall, with the 30th license round, we're very grateful to the Oil and Gas Authority for licensing that to us. What it meant was that we have extended our whole reserve base quite a bit. So we have this trend that has 80 or perhaps more million barrels of oil, and it's ours, 100%. And you know, it's an excellent reservoir. This is Brent crude. This is 30 API crude that attracts a premium in the market. So it's just, in our minds, a great project. And we've been reviewing this with a number of parties. You may recall, on getting that license, we have been in joint venture conversations, and we've been able to announce today that with that scale of the whole magnitude of the project, it's attracted a number of parties, and we've been able to select a party, and that's why we're now exclusive, and we're really excited about that.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, you haven't revealed the name there, so, but you have, like you said, granted a period of exclusivity. This is a joint venture negotiations to a potential farminee in order to conclude the contractual negotiations with. Upon success, this would result in I3 being fully funded for both the Liberator field and the appraisal well of Liberator West. So this exclusivity started when? On the release of this RNS, is that correct?
Correct, absolutely. And, you know, what it means is, you know, we have, you know, with a, you know, chosen a partner that recognises this scale. We've been negotiating for a while and doing lots of due diligence, which is finished really, in terms of attracting, because of the readiness and the skill, attracting a partner into this. Now, what we've been focusing on is returning shareholder value here, which is, I think, is particularly exciting because it won the skill. Two, you may recall, we've been working on multiple wells to be drilled in this development. And what this arrangement does do is we're fully funded, and then it brings the maximum value, it brings forward lots of the development. There is an appraisal part of this whole trend. If you take a look at our website, you can see that we have this great upside there of an extra 47 million barrels. And what we've been doing is we've been also seeking alignment then with the right partner to make sure we will appraise and we will develop out that whole trend. So again, maximize the share of value. It's a great deal. We're shareholders in the company. We've been concentrating on to make sure that we have the best case. And this is the earliest opportunity we've had to actually announce that we have entered this period. There are normal practice in terms of getting to a sales and purchase agreement. A lot of the commercial framework is being agreed. So, as you know, we it's always down to final documentation. So we're you know aggressively working on that and just really excited about the whole project.
Yeah. So this 90 days, I mean, you say it's obviously a formality kind of thing that happens all the time, and you do sit there and there's no guarantee. But a couple of questions. So what kind of thing has happened during these 90 days, and how confident are you of coming out with this partner?
Well, the 90 days may be shorter, of course, but that's just, partners, we give ourselves a chance to make sure we can do anything that's, you know, going from what's been agreed into final documentation. We're not slowing anything down. We're carrying on with all our work on the development. We are resubmitting, you may recall, because of getting this large area, we are revising our field development plan. We call it an enlarged field development plan. So we're working that together. We're going to resubmit that. And again, we're doing everything to keep up the time frame to first oil as early as possible. Mm-hmm. And also to make sure, you know, again, this is why we're really excited about the whole joint venturing. It really brings forward, it accelerates the capacity to appraise and bring forward that other potential further out to the west. So, it's getting to first oil. It's working with our partner to make sure we're doing everything to bring forward that potential. And that said, and we're doing this on a funding basis, that means, you know, it's just world class as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So you say it could be less than 90 days. And then you mentioned, obviously, first of all, then. So take us through, if you could, in your head. I mean, obviously, it's hard to put hard dates on these. Timeline-wise, say over the next 6-12 months, what will be sort of happening, do you think?
Well, everything we do is always subject to you know, our regulator. So, you know, that's what we do, and we want to make sure we're doing that well. And that's around the field amount plan. So our expectation is that we will close, you know, confident we'll close on our sales and purchase agreement. And we will be working with our joint venture on the, they'll be joining us in that field development. So we'll be doing that. And in the meantime, we are keeping up all our in the supply chain in terms of the, you know, getting our kit, because we're ready in at quite a high state of readiness here. Yeah. So we'll be keeping that going to some extent, because the project is larger, that we're making sure that we're putting in all the aspects that keeps that potential there, and that we can keep expanding into the development.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, guys, and was there? I mean, you said you had lots of discussions here on about joint venture, the funding side of it. Was there quite a bit of interest here?
There was, yes. And again, it's back to shareholder value. You know, we wanted to make sure that we're really large shareholders. We wanted to make sure that we're looking after everybody and getting the best deal possible, and we always do that. And we've been tactical. We did have to wait until we were awarded the extension to the West, Liberator West. So, you know, it's a little bit frustrating for everybody, probably. You know, we're sorry about that, but it's kind of, you know, what we've been doing is making sure we're maximizing shareholder value.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, guys, thanks for coming on. One last thing to do. If someone's listening to this or likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, here we are. It's a material announcement, really. We're confident that this will lead to the fully funded project. This scale for companies of our size, we expect that there will be a re-rating in the market. 80 million barrels is not a small amount. That's a significant amount of oil. Brent is rising. We're having a great summer in the UK. This is just great news, fantastic news for our company.
Yeah, well, let's have a final word from Graham there, because he's been a bit quiet in the background there, but I know he's a man with his figures in his head. So Graham, I mean, you know, you've both worked together on this, and it's almost, you know, working to plan, isn't it? Are you very pleased by this announcement today?
We're absolutely thrilled. You know, I think a major milestone for us was, you know, getting up to 80 million barrels of reserves and resources after the 30th licensing round. You know, we've been in sort of 6 months of counterparty selection and due diligence. And, you know, we as a board have unanimously chosen that party that we believe is going to be represent the best path for us and our shareholders. We do expect to, you know, disclose more detail regarding the commercial terms and also the party by name during the course of July. And, you know, as we said, we've just entered in what we believe to be the, you know, legally binding documentation phase to get everything finally stitched up on what will be a multi-well development and appraisal program at Liberator and Liberator West, where I-3 is fully carried. So for a company with a very low share count by AIM standards, we think this is a fantastic result for our shareholders.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, good to chat to you, and like you say, hopefully we'll have news out soon, and so hopefully we'll speak again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Justin.
Very good. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Matthew Iddian, CEO of Rose Petroleum. That's R-O-S-E. Matthew, thanks for joining me again.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we've had a couple of people mention you. In fact, Malky came on the podcast on Monday talking about you. I know you've been quite quiet until recently. You've announced some significant news, so we'll go over that again. Before we do, Matt, if people are listening right now, there are new people joining all the time, and there are people who may not have heard of the company. So give us a summary. What is Rose Petroleum all about, please?
So Rose is an AIM-listed North American-focused oil and gas company. We are earning into a 75% working interest in approximately 80,000 acres in the Paradox Basin in Utah, which has been exploited directly south of us. We shot 3D seismic at the end of last year. over about 17,000 of our 80,000 acres, so a small portion of it, but the excellent quality of the data has allowed us to make the significant progress we have done over the last 6 months in terms of geological work, infrastructure. So obviously the US is a great place to work in terms of that, but the whole process through, not just a geological assessment, but actually, you know, where we're going to sell the oil, where we're going to sell the gas, costs, etc., the whole thing now. We've made significant progress over the last 6 months. Put this to Gaffney Klein to produce a CPR, and that is where they came up with these numbers that we released last week.
Yeah, okay, and this is a sort of competent person's report, maiden contingent resource. So I want us to break this down, because there are people maybe not aware of you know, some of the technicalities or the terminology here. Take us through, your maiden contingent resource, explain what that means and what the CPR means. And also, when people are reading this, they'll see category 1C, 2C, 3C, and you'll see amount of oil next to that figures and all that stuff, and what's net to you. Can you explain the intricacies, if someone's reading this for the first time, they're not that familiar with terminology? What does it mean?
Yeah, so you have sort of reserves, obviously, which are proven probable. Mm-hmm. Then you move down into contingent resources, which are the next one down. So your reserves are where you've drilled a well and you know that it's producing and it's developable.
So the confidence level in that is very high.
Very, very high, yeah. And then you have the next level down, which is where we are, which is contingent resources, which is still very high confidence, but there are still things that need to be done. And in our case, we need to drill a well to prove that there is a well drilled, you know, 400 meters from our acreage, which produced oil. So we're confident that the oil is there. Mm-hmm. The commerciality of it is the question, this has been proven directly south of us by the operator directly south of us. The process, so they've been using 3D seismic as we are, so there's no point in reinventing the wheel. We know how this works. They identify fracture networks and then they drill horizontally into those fracture networks, and that is where you get the commercial flow rates, utilizing the existing fractures that exist that you identify through the seismic. Mm-hmm. And that is what we will be doing. So we'll be following exactly what's been done before successfully. And that is why we get the contingent resources. Now, so 1C is the low estimate of contingents. 2C is the best estimate, which is the one that most people quote. And then 3C is the high estimate. So the potential upside.
Yes, so I'm looking at 2C, so that's best estimate. So it's showing net to you 9.25 million barrels of oil, and gas-wise, 18.5 BSCF. So that's obviously, you know, when you look at that in regards to your market cap, that's quite impressive, isn't it? So, for people not aware of gas, how do they convert that? I mean, because there's a certain formula, isn't it, for 18.5?
Yeah, basically the easiest way is divide by 6. So yeah. your BOE, so your barrel of oil equivalent, mm-hmm. for that is 12.3 million barrels of oil equivalent, so BOE.
Okay, yeah. So, I understand. And just walking, if people want to sort of put a monetary sort of figure on that, you have got a pre-tax net present value, NPV, and a post-tax NPV. Take us through, for people not aware of, you know, NPV, what does that mean?
Net present value. Mm-hmm. So they've discounted cash flows.
Okay, and so you've got there 2C, which is the best estimate, post-tax, exactly, of $86.9 million. So
yeah, that's post-tax. We actually have, as in the announcement, it did say that we actually have some operating losses, all the expenditures that we've spent to date, approximately $10 million. And that doesn't include that. So it's your pre-tax number is probably your better number to use, because it's a sort of more accurate and you can work out the taxes, etc., from there. So that's $122 million. But that is also on our 75%. That is not the project. That is our 75% working interest, and only on these contingent resources. So these contingent resources only represent that 17,000 acres of our 80,000 that we have shot 3D seismic over.
Yeah.
So it's a small portion. And it also to make it even more impressive, is that it only represents one formation, the Classic 21, which is the one that has been produced the most directly south of us. There are multiple other formations above and below Classic 21 that have the potential to produce, but we have focused solely on that one for the time being because that is where we have the most data. We are intending to update another CPR to cover those other clastics and also the area outside the 3D, but those obviously without that 3D data contingent resources, that category will be unlikely to be achieved, purely because there just isn't the data to back it up. But it would be it will be an interesting number to see.
Yeah, and you say, and you say 17,250 acres of around about 80,000. So obviously you can't just times that up. But I mean, so no. What? I assume is a multiple chance of this, or you can obviously times it a couple of times maybe. But or can you? I mean, what is how much more can there be there?
There is of the Classic 1, so Classic 21. There's approximately an additional 37,000 acres where we believe that clastic is present. Mm-hmm. The other clastics, which are shallower, are we believe to be present throughout the whole acreage, all 80,000 acres. So you can't do a direct, divide 80,000 by 17,000 and then multiply by the number, whatever the calculation is. But in terms of the Classic 21, you could extrapolate it out twice at least, sort of 2.5 times.
Yeah. Well, I see. I mean, in an RNS, there was a previous CPR, wasn't there, over the entire acreage, wasn't there?
There was, yeah. That was done in 2014 by Ryder Scott. Is a prospective recoverable resources numbers, and those numbers were covered every single acre and every single formation. So they're obviously considerably larger.
But it's worth mentioning that. So that's saying it's 966 million barrels of oil and 1.8 yep. trillion cubic feet of gas. So that's
those are big numbers.
Those are big numbers. So what's next then? I mean, you've got the 3D design, you've got the CPR here on the contingent resources. What is next then, Matthew?
So operationally, we are very busy on the ground. We're permitting two wells locations at the moment and pushing forward those with the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, who are the federal government agent looking after the permitting process. So that's going forward. We're expecting those Q3 this year with the intent to drill a well in Q4 of this year. We are talking to various parties in terms of a farm-in on the project. Obviously, the recent release of the CPR is hugely helpful in terms of ratification of the work that we have done, and also value. Obviously, you've got an NPV there when you're negotiating someone with the market cap we've got, that was making life interesting. To be able to have an NPV for a third party, it gives me another point of negotiation, which is helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous stuff. Well, listen, Matthew, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of it, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
I think we're a very interesting opportunity in terms of value. That's for sure. If you look at our market cap compared to the NPV of the small portion of the project that we have got the third party estimate on, we've got good news flow over the next 6 months. It's very exciting times for us in terms of that, and the management team are all in. Involved in terms of, but well, financially, we've all got a piece of the pie, so it's incentivized to do a deal on the farm in or get the least dilution possible, which is always a concern. But I think the project is an excellent one and really stacks up both financially. The oil price is right, moving the right direction. Sentiment is there, momentum's there. we should be a great performing stock.
Marvellous stuff. Matthew, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Rehobold Resources, RBD. At four, Aotech International, AOR. At three, Premier African Minerals, PREM. At two, Block Energy, BLOE. And number one most followed company is Greatland Gold, GGP. OK, top five most liked analysts are as follows. Infrastrata, board changes and senior management appointment. Yeah, it's impressive. There's a turnaround story happening there, and they are developing and progressing that story very well. At four, i3 Energy, joint venture negotiations. I just talked to the guys, of course, on the podcast. At three, Premier African Minerals, strategic investment to fully fund Zulu DFS. And, of course, I talked to Kieran, who is investing in Premier African in relation to that project. At two, Highlands Natural Resources, East Denver project update. And number one, most liked RNS came from UK Oil and Gas, production flow test, operations commence. And that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciatus. Don't forget, try the app. Download it if it's free of charge if you haven't done it already. That's voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.